He would have been good. Yeah, it would. He's going to be good in New Jersey. Unfortunately.
Is everything
all right? Welcome back to the new Earl Ingram Show. 540 AM WAUK and 101 FM, the show. You can join us at 844-967-2789. And as promised, I am joined by my good friend. And as I said earlier, the one guy that I know that I would want to have over these airways with me at this unfortunate time in history is Sandy Williams. And Sandy, it's good to have you here. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing all right. I woke up, you know, it's a horror show, you know, in terms of seeing this in real time. It's hard to watch.
So where to begin, Sandy? I said a few minutes ago that I'm pretty naive. I never would have imagined that this would be happening because of the threats that, you know, you really didn't want to see United States and Russia or even China even getting to a point where something could happen. But are we there now?
Well, we obviously are there now. I mean, I don't know about United States versus Russia. I think Biden has made it pretty clear that from a geopolitical standpoint, we aren't going to put boots on the ground in Russia's backyard and attempt to defend Ukraine when it's not a member of NATO. But I think this is all the result of 30 years of ignoring geopolitical realities and tinkering with the vacuum that was created when the Soviet Union collapsed. Ukraine was always very central to the Soviet Union. It has a very different history than just the history of one sovereign country. The eastern part, the part that's contested now, was controlled by what they call the Yellow Horde, the great Genghis Khan and that lot. And then the southern part, Crimea, was the Crimean Khanate, which was an Ottoman Empire holding. And the eastern part of the western part of Ukraine was held by Lithuania and Poland and those empires when it wasn't then moved into the Romanov Russian Empire. It's had very little history as a freestanding country, which is what one thing that Putin was talking about. But I think what's happened is that the United States decides to ignore geopolitical realities and tinkers in foreign policy. So we clearly had some kind of a role to play in the 2014 coup that eliminated the pro-Russian president and installed a pro-nationalist president, separatist nationalist president. And that shift is what led to the Crimea invasion, because that shift also led to both an open invitation and a seeming interest on the part of Ukraine into joining NATO. NATO's only purpose when it was formed was as an anti-Soviet protective shield. When the Soviet Union fell, even those in the United States, those in NATO, everyone was saying, well, what purpose does NATO have now? And however, NATO as an institution was a living, breathing institution that didn't want to die and wanted to survive. And so we began to think of NATO as a series of alliances. We even talked about having Russia join NATO, and Putin at one point talked about it. But thoughtful observers of Russia believe that the United States really set the table for Putin's ascendancy to power by the way we started tinkering with NATO and the old Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact countries and primarily Ukraine. Ukraine is much closer to the liver and heart, the vital organs of Russia, than we've given it credit for being. And so tinkering with it is bound to kind of stick a sharp stick in the eye of the Russian lion, and the Russian lion sleeps, right? But Russia's a proud country, just like we are, and is prone to nationalist kind of rancor when they believe their dignity has been assaulted. And Putin rode that crest. He was able to describe how it was that the West was ignoring Russia, treating it like a lapdog and a stepsister instead of the power that it had always felt that it was. And so he rode that to a political crest within Russia, and his following in Russia is largely tied much to his sort of nationalistic pride and the essentially the rejuvenation of Russia. I know Russians and people who lived through the Soviet Union did feel a great deal of sorrow at the collapse of their country, just as we would. If the United States of America collapsed and we suddenly found Texas and California and Massachusetts and New York and Florida and all these places as independent countries, and then those countries were being courted by China, for instance, I'm sure that we as a people, even though we no longer were in the Soviet Union, would be thinking about how can we get back to where we were.
You know, Sandy, the celebration, I remember well that we in this country had when USSR came apart. And you talked about how proud Putin was and those kind of things. And I don't want anybody to misconstrue.
Well, I'm not supporting. I know.
This is,
by
this
all of this talk, you know, there are bad guys to go around. And Putin is definitely not a good guy. But lots of countries are led by people who aren't good guys, and we decide that we're going to be opposed to some and not to others. I can guarantee you that the new crown prince of Saudi Arabia is not a good guy, right? I mean, he had Khashoggi cut up into pieces and right. taken out in duffel bags. That's not a very good guy. But our foreign policy is not typically been tied necessarily to who are good guys. Chiang Kai-shek wasn't a good guy for most of free China, and either was the general of South Vietnam when we joined with them. So that's not our litmus.
So Sandy, people may think, and I want you to help explain this, that the only bad thing that can come out of this for the United States is that, you know, we may wind up in a war, but we may not wind up in a physical war, but our economy will be impacted and affected by this, won't it?
Well, sure. I mean, all right, it's going to be impacted in the short run. The price of oil ran up yesterday to over $105 a barrel. That's a first since 2014, I think. And there's going to be other fallout, too, shortages of things. Wars create... They create blocks in the trade. They create blocks in transportation. All sorts of airports in Europe have been shut down that neighbor Russia. Russia's a vast, vast country. It's the biggest country in the world by a long shot. And
you mean landmass?
Landmass, right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, by a long shot. It's only got 142 million people, down from when it was the Soviet Union and had, I think, 300. But It's a very important landmass, and it lies in an important place, and it needs to be dealt with as an important country for that reason, and we haven't been doing that, and so that alone. But I think the problem is there are stories about playgrounds and bullies, and usually the stories about those are someone stands up to the bully, and the bully doesn't carry through with his bullying, and forevermore is not viewed as a strong, tough guy to be concerned about. That's a little bit the problem with what's going to happen here, because the United States is viewed by the rest of the world pretty much as a bully, someone who can get their way, demand it, force people to their knees, and that's not what's happening with this situation. And the sanctions that are going to be imposed always involve self-wounds, too. I mean, when you sanction someone financially, economically, you're shooting off one of your toes as well. I mean, one of the things we talk about is shutting down the SWIFT system, which is the system for making international transfers of money, dollars.
Right.
And if you shut Russia out of the SWIFT system, that means that dollars can't flow in and money can't flow out on international transactions in the way it normally would. And that means, incidentally, that the $200 billion of Russian debt that is owed to European banks couldn't get paid back. So there's a bunch of creditors out there who think that shutting down SWIFT isn't a very good idea.
So this is not going to be quick, the invasion of the Ukraine, is it? You look at the size of Russia, the military armament that it has, and it's like David and Goliath. There's no way Ukraine can survive.
Well, the only way Ukraine would have a chance of surviving is if we continue to give them sophisticated weaponry.
But, which we're going to be doing because we've already started.
Which we say we're going to be doing. So what we're really doing is giving them an opportunity to prolong this horror.
The inevitable.
Because if we aren't going to go there to back them, ultimately, Russia's capabilities in every area of sophisticated weaponry is fully capable of taking on whatever we give them. It simply means that Russia will suffer more losses in the context of that fight.
And become more angry.
Yes, well, we get more dug in, and as this thing rides out longer and longer, the pressure for boots on the ground by so-called allies, what happens is, apparently, if you're in NATO, you're golden. If you're outside NATO, tough luck. And so the question is the world really going to, in the long run, if this becomes a prolonged war, is that really the way the rest of the world is going to treat?
So, Sandy, what are we going to call a prolonged war? We were just in Afghanistan for all those years and Iraq, and that's nothing compared to what we're talking about now.
Well, but this is different. Ukraine is surrounded, logistically, physically surrounded by Belarus on the north and west, and Russia all the way around the rest of it. And so Russia's in a position, Belarus is basically its strong ally, is in a position to cut off all logistical support other than air support, which they can definitely cut off by their conduct of air control through their air force, so they can strangle Ukraine and make it impossible really for anyone else to come in. And that's one of the reasons that I think Biden is and everyone else realizes we're going to stand by and watch this. And the only way it'll go on very long is if we provide the tools to Ukraine to prolong the agony of the process.
You know, Sandy, at the same time in China, they are saying, well, in Beijing, they are saying, oh, look at what happened.
Well, clearly we think they're saying that. We think they must be saying that because, of course, we've got Taiwan sitting there
right.
as a similarly contested sort of turf. And there, at least in Taiwan, there is something of strategic value. They have the largest chip manufacturing plant in the world. It provides something like 44% of the chips to the world out of Taiwan. So the chips are very, very vital, and the notion that those could be cut off, but the chips that aren't made in Taiwan, many of them are made in China. So, this is we've backed ourselves into this
situation. So hold that thought, Sandy. Phone lines are open at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You're tuning into the new Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. Yeah,